Welcome back once again to 356, the first Paris of the Patriot Show. It may be the 356th episode of this show, but it is the first and only Paris of the Patriots for the year 2026. And it's going to be a tough show. This is one of those tough times. I'm recording this early Saturday morning. And on the news this morning, the U.S. done some bombing in Venezuela and captured Maduro. This show's going to air on Tuesday. You know, so on the one hand, how do I not talk about the Venezuela thing? But on the other hand, I can't really talk about it because I don't even, you know, there's right now when I'm recording this, there's very little information out there. But that's not going to stop me. We are going to talk about it in a broad sense. Because there are broad things that apply here that we understand. I'm not going to get into details because I don't have them. And I look stupid because the show's going to air 2 or 3 days from now. Yeah, 3 days from now. And I'd just be like, this guy don't even know what he's talking about. Well, because, like I said, this is early Saturday morning. I do a quick check of the news before I sit down and record, and this has happened. But it's okay. Because we, like I say, there's some broad things we can look at with these sorts of things. They're going to apply. I can be confident. We will, of course, still be having our Christian-specific segment. That is roughly the halfway point of the show, and that is always the best part of the show. It's the main part of the show. That'll, like I say, that'll be roughly the halfway point. Look forward to it. I always do. I think that's, like I say, I think that's the meat of the show, as it were. If you do get something on the show, don't be shy to pay those tithes. We got snail mail. You can look on the description page for each episode here, and there it is. I got an address. I don't have cryptocurrency, bitcoins, any of that. If you, I know there's bitcoin addresses on the page. Those are Sven's for Radio Albion. And sometimes people get confused, you know, because you go through the description for, say, this show, and you to the bottom, it says, we can accept donations. We, they know we here. That's Sven. That ain't me. Well, I mean, it is we because this, you wouldn't be hearing the show if it wasn't on Radio Albion. So there is a we in that sense. But I can't log in and get cryptocurrency out of those. I don't have the logins. I don't have anything to do with that. Those are Sven's. I got snail mail. Anyone can address an envelope. So, we got that. I don't have any this week. It was just surprising because, you know, last week I just got back from Christmas. I didn't have time to even go check the mail. So I waited all week this week and I thought, man, I got basically 2 weeks. I'm peaked in here. It's going to be stuffed. There ain't nothing in there. Surprising, because I did get an email from a listener that I stuck you a Christmas card hoping you were going to get that before Christmas got here or whatever. And it, hey, man, it's the post office. You know, it's just there's stuff I've been expecting in the mail. You know, I went out trotting out, checking the mail, and yeah, still ain't bills and stuff still late showing up. It's just the post office, so. Anyway, if you do get something and you so are inclined, it's always appreciated. You're getting the show free regardless, so that ain't no big deal as far as that goes. You're going to put nothing behind a paywall. Yeah, they do nothing like that. But anyway, we slog on through that. So, like I said, as of this morning, the U.S. has done strikes on Venezuela and they've captured Maduro and his wife, hauling them to the U.S. to face the courts. Like, how in the hell is American laws supposed to apply? It's supposed to apply to somebody in another country. Of course, this is a point. This is just, don't try to make sense of it because it doesn't make sense. You know, in a logical sense. You know, don't listen to their words about, oh, he's going to face justice in America. For violating our laws. Don't start getting off into how our law is supposed to put. They know they're lying. Don't try to make it make sense because it doesn't make sense because they're just making that up as they go. Once again, I'm not our geopolitical expert. We leave that to Dr. Johnson. You get some, I'm sure, better insights from him. But you get my opinions for what that's worth. And again, we've seen this show before, so there's certain things we can apply. First off, obviously, this happened pretty quickly. You know, you did some strikes. And all of a sudden, this guy's captured. So this tells us, we can discern from this, that their military largely stood down. Now, you sit there and scratch your head and say, why is that? But actually, I think like Syria, you can kind of get it. I mean, for instance, you say you're a higher ranking officer in the Venezuelan military. And you're getting paid like, I don't know, $50 a month or whatever the hell. I don't know what they get paid, but you're getting paid $50 a month. The people at the top are super rich. And, you know, you got the U.S. with its Navy camped outside the country off the coast. And, you know, we know they announced that the CIA had been working in the country. And, you know, some CIA people come to you and they say, okay, we can pay you enough money to live the rest of your life comfortably with your family. And, you know, you just make sure that you don't fire off any anti-aircraft missiles. You know, or you can be a target. Which one do you want to do? And they choose the first option. You can sit there and say, there ain't no loyalty. Just stare with me on this. You know, because honestly, in that situation, what would you do? You know, you're getting paid a pittance. And the people at the top are living in a palace. And you can either take one for the team in a battle, or you can get a big suitcase full of cash, maybe promised a ticket to go live in Miami, move your family, and you're set for the rest of your life. You know, it just, put it another way. Think of it another way. Before you're tempted to look down on these guys for making these decisions. Hypothetically, let's say Russia and China teamed up behind the scenes. And they're going to launch an attack on Washington, D.C. and New York City. A joint strike on Washington, D.C. and New York City. They're going to attack them. They're going to overthrow them. They're going to round up the Congress. Don't get excited. This is just a fantasy story. Don't get too aroused. And working behind the scenes, they send some envoys and they come to you for whatever reason. And they say, hey, we can give you, you know, a big suitcase full of money as long as you'll stand down. It's like, man, you ain't got it. I'm not going to take the money. Hell, I'd be like, you ain't got to pay me, man. You're going to do that. I'm going to be sitting over here being cozy as long as you promise not to bomb me in my area. I don't care about New York City, Wall Street, the banks, Washington, D.C. Have at it, bruh. Just leave me alone. Leave my little corner of the world alone. I don't care what you do to them people. Wouldn't you? I mean, would you, you know, it's like this talk of wars, you know, and then, you know, would you, let's say they enact a draft in America to go send you to fight for Israel. Are you going to do it? Nah, man. And it's the same thing for them dudes, man. You know, I mean, you can sit there and say, yeah, this is BS what the U.S. is doing. But like, that doesn't mean we have to delude ourselves like Maduro is this great guy or something. It's always the usual thing. The people at the top are super rich. Everybody else is poor. What are you going to do? You can take a suitcase full of cash. Probably don't even care about them dudes that much. Simple as. No different than they want you to go fight Iran. They're going to have to draft you to go fight for the Ukraine. For them? While they sit around and line their pockets? Nah, man. Nah. Hell, like I say, they bomb in Washington, D.C. and New York. They ain't even got to pay me. Just promise not to bomb me. I ain't got no beef with y'all, man. Now, I know it's tempting. Again, this story just broke. It's tempting to sit around and ask yourself, what are we going to get? You're going to get something out of it, my friend. You may be thinking, I ain't going to get nothing out of this. I'm an American. What the hell, Trump? What is me? What is me, the common man, going to get out of this? You're going to get something out of it, bruh. You know what you're going to get out of it? Refugees. Remember, you know, several years ago, they were going on about all the people we were getting from El Salvador. Guess what? You're going to get a taste of the Venezuela next. Maybe not right away. You can sit there, you know, if you're in the red hat cult, you can sit there and say, oh, no, Trump is securing our border. You may wait a few years when they cycle Team D in, because we get these, you know, in cycles. Right now we're in the Team R cycle. But you'll get the Team D. So at some point in time, I can virtually guarantee you, for the simple sense that I've seen this before, we've all seen this before, you're now just going by the previous patterns. One of the things you as an American are guaranteed to get out of this is Venezuelan refugees. And not to mention quite a few lectures on how we owe them to come here. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get refugees. It's kind of like they've already been stealing the oil. You know, they've been hijacking. They've been doing the piracy thing. Piracy on the open seas, piracy on the high seas, and stealing this oil. And I've been asking for a while, who's getting the money? You ain't. You know, the media never talks about that. They were seizing these Venezuelan oil tankers. And I'm like, well, they're pumping the oil out. I'm assuming they're escorting these ships to the U.S. ports and pumping the oil out. And the oil is getting sold. Who gets the money? Ain't you, is it? Now, you don't get the oil money. And they're talking about, oh, there's the U.S. trying to seize Venezuelan oil. You ain't going to get none of that. Imagine if you were getting a dividend. You know, for every barrel of U.S. oil, you're going to get a cut of it. Like they kind of like they do, you know, in some of the Middle Eastern countries, like they let the people get a piece of that oil action. Just a little bit. A dividend. You ain't getting no dividend. You're going to get refugees in your neighborhood. 100%. You know, they have been going on about the whole Somalians and the daycare centers, you know, the fake daycare centers, and they frauded out millions of dollars, and we're supposed to be shocked and surprised at this. Who's shocked and surprised? This is what they do in Somalia. The magic dirt has failed again. You're going to get Venezuelans in America. That's what you get. You're not going to get any of the oil. That's for them. Again, would you not stand down if offered the deal? Now, another thing you notice from this whole thing are the reactions. And again, this is early for me. And the reactions are all, you know, from around the world are all pretty standard, what you expect. But there's lessons to be gleaned here, my friends. Some of the neighboring countries are already complaining about this violation of international law. Keep relying on the rules-based order. See how that goes for you. It amazes me. Some people will be disappointed. They were expecting Russia and China to come rush into Venezuela's rescue. Again, there's a lesson to be learned here. Russia's early this morning, Russia's already issued some, you know, they're going to call for an emergency meeting at the United Nations, which is a whole lot of nothing. You know it. I know it. Nothing ever happens. You sit around and say, oh, great. This is what Venezuela gets for being aligned with Russia. A strongly, you know, emergency meeting at the United Nations, which will amount to what? Nothing. But here's the thing about that. Venezuela is essentially in the U.S.'s backyard. So, it's really not surprising that this is the reaction. Now, the lesson here, that the reason I wanted to bring this up, is flip side of this. You have the make-believe Baltic countries like Estonia, Lithuania, and the rest of them there that are always yapping at Russia because they think that Article 5 means America will come and fight Russia for them. I'm going to tell you this. This is, you snicker. You know, you snicker that Russia hadn't done anything, that China hadn't done anything to come to the defense of Venezuela. All they're doing is a strongly worded, you know, they're demanding an emergency meeting of the United Nations and condemning American aggression. That's what Article 5 is going to amount to you. Article 5 is like all of these other treaties that the U.S. has signed throughout its history. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. America is not going to go to war with Russia in their backyard, just as Russia wasn't about to go to war with America in their backyard over Venezuela. Russia, the United States is not, if Russia isn't going to, but if they did, if Russia rolled into Estonia tomorrow, if they rolled tanks into Lithuania, you're going to get, you know what the Americans are going to do? The same damn thing. They're going to give you they're going to call for an emergency meeting at the United Nations and talk about sanctions. And you sitting around going, wait, I thought Article 5 meant, you know, the American military was coming to our rescue. They ain't. The Americans going to do the same damn thing. At the end of the day, America's not going to, I've said this before because it's so annoying because their retarded leadership in these countries keep going on like they're going to get the U.S. The U.S. They can talk all the shit they want to because America has their back. They do not. You're going to get the strongly worded condemnation at the United Nations Security Council. That's going to be your Article 5. That's what Article 5 says. It doesn't say America's going to come fight for you. It says they come to the defense. That can be broadly defined. That's like in the U.S. Constitution. The general welfare of the population. You can define anything as coming to your defense. They came to your defense. They went to the United Nations and called for an emergency meeting of the Security Council and issued a strongly worded condemnation of Russian aggression on Lithuania. That's what you're going to get. Just like that's what Venezuela got from Russia. You're going to convene. They're going to convene. Anyway. It amazes me the way these countries, you know, I mean, it's not like we didn't see this coming. You know, if I can see it coming, surely they could see it coming. The countries always seem woefully unprepared, you know, and right now the next country on the list is Iran. You know, I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a simple country boy. I have to be amazed at these various countries that just seem so, I don't know, woefully unprepared. Iran is next on the list. We know Iran's next on the list. The president of America, Bibi Netanyahu, was just back in Washington, D.C. to issue some more orders to his subordinate, all of his subordinates. People be going on and be like, you know, yeah, Trump's over there, man. He just getting bossed around by Netanyahu. Yeah, and all of the Congress, too. You think the Congress is going to stop Trump from doing whatever Netanyahu wants him to do? They're all owned. It's the entirety of the system. Iran's next on the block. You know, King of America, Netanyahu showed up, issued some more orders. But we got something out of it. Again, you're getting something out of it. Did you see where Donald Trump got the Silver Menorah Award? Did you see that? They gave him the Israel Award, which is usually only someone in Israel gets it. But King Netanyahu said that Trump has done so much for Israel that they made an exception, and they're going to give this award. And there's Trump standing up there smiling, holding the big silver menorah. You can't make it up, man. You can't make this. It's so ridiculous. It's satire, and yet it's reality. Iran's next on the block. Right after King Netanyahu shows up, we have protests breaking out in Iran, because their economy is basically tanking because of various sanctions and attacks and whatnot. And now you got protests in the street. You know, and it was funny because Mossad came out and made a public statement that they are involved in these protests. We're here with you. So you got Mossad stirring up these protests. I'm like, what the hell are the Iranians doing? I was thinking about this just the other day, before the Venezuela thing happened, obviously, because that just happened today. And I was thinking about the Iran thing. And I'm like, this has to be because all of these countries are run by boomers. Really, they're run by boomers. They keep acting. They keep acting like they can just do this. You know, we're going to work out with these guys and work out a reasonable. Blah, 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 blah. And now, they you had the whole thing where Israel attacked Iran with America. Of course, they ordered America to come in. Our greatest ally. No, it's not our greatest ally. It's our boss. And so American and Israel attacks Iran. Iran starts launching some missiles back, starts overwhelming Israel's so-called Iron Dome, and starts blowing up various things. And basically, the Americans have to go to the Iranians and beg them to stop. Let's just stop here. And what do the Iranians do? Okay, now they know. No! Voila. Wait a few months, and what do you got? Oh, protests are in the street. I wonder if this is a regime change operation. Now that your economy's tanking. Thank you for stepping back and giving them the opportunity to regroup and come at you again. These boomers have no idea. No clue. You had them. I mean, just launch everything. Seriously, you had an advantage. They attacked you. You had every right to defend yourself, and you're blowing their dudes up. America can't just keep on going as it were. They were going to have to stop, and then you were really going to start blowing stuff up in Israel. And they beg you to stop, and you do it. Because now they know. Now they know we mean business. They won't attack us again. Oh, King Netanyahu comes and visits Trump next day. You got protests blowing, burning your cities down and shit. I don't know. It's just like these guys. I know I keep saying these boomer leaders, but you know what I mean. I'm not trying to insult those of you listening who are boomers, but I mean, you compare that. Compare this to compare this to Kim Jong-un, not a boomer. His country is under massive sanctions. And you know what else he ain't got? He ain't got all this stuff going on. They ain't launching. You see South Korea launching any missiles into North Korea to take them out in the name of democracy? You see any of that happening? You can sit there and say, well, that's because North Korea backed by China and they're in China's backyard. That is a part of it. But I tell you, you want to know what the bigger part of it is? Because they know Kim Jong-un just light off everything he got. He don't give a shit. If South Korea, if Japan had launched, if Japan and America had launched an attack on North Korea, just as Israel and America launched an attack on Iran, what do you think North Korea's action's going to be? You think they're just going to start launching some missiles at Tokyo, and then when America begs them to stop, they say, well, okay. No, Kim Jong-un ain't going to do that, and they know it. They know that if they light that fuse off, there ain't no begging to stop now. He's launching everything he got. You fixing to find out exactly what they do and don't have. They're going to launch everything they got, and if they got like Tokyo's on fire, you ain't going to beg them to stop. He's going to be like, well, let's see if we can go ahead and finish burning this to the ground. And I remember back before they had their nukes, and the Americans were trying to play all these usual games, just like they played with the Iranians. The only difference is the North Koreans didn't fall for it. You know, they tried all this manipulation. Oh, we're going to monitor their nuclear program so they don't develop nukes. And they did it anyway. Trump tried to go in there in his first term. We're going to negotiate with the North Koreans. And then they tried to slip the whole, you got to give up your ballistic missiles and your nukes in there. And Kim Jong, but we're going to make you a part of America. We're going to make you part of, the rest of the world. We'll someday lift the sanctions maybe. But you're going to have to give up your nukes. And he just laughed in their face and walked off. And they were all these boomers from America, the American delegation, Trump and the rest of them. They were all shocked. He just walked away. We were going to offer him maybe some sanctions relief later. Didn't fall for it. They ain't doing no regime change in North Korea, are they? They ain't dragging Kim Jong-un up before an American court. Why is that? Because he'll light the whole shit off. He don't care. And I mean, I just, you know, it comes back to leadership. I don't even think it's so much military capability, you know? Because, I mean, let's be honest. You know, if America, if the U.S. government, you know, rallied its old military force from around the world and concentrated it on North Korea. This is a hypothetical. And let's say China is not going to get involved. You're going to leave China out of the equation. Just North Korea. Let's just say for whatever reason, China is not going to get involved. And America rallied its entire military force to attack North Korea. Again, it's not going to happen. It's just a hypothetical. Bear with me because I want to make a point here. Yes, the U.S. could defeat North Korea. But even in that hypothetical situation, it's not going to happen. You know why? Because he'll fight. And I mean, like he not one of these show fightings, like we're going to launch some missiles and try to convince you to back off. No, I mean, like he will literally like level. Yeah, Seoul, you might take over North Korea. Seoul is going to get nuked and maybe Tokyo. He don't give a shit. He's going to launch everything he got. It's kind of like when a bully somebody, you know, it's always somebody littler, you know, it's always a smaller dude because that's what they do. And yet, when they know the smaller dude will fight, it does, and most of the time, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't matter if the bully knows he can kick that guy's ass. Because he knows you don't get a, no one gets out of a fight clean. You know, it ain't TV. If you get in a fight, you might kick that guy's ass, but he's going to bloody your nose. You're going to wake up the next day like, with bruises and shit on you. That's just how it is. You can go around and tell everybody, yeah, well, I whipped his ass, but you still got a broken nose. You know, you're still disfigured now. And it's like that. The bully don't want no part of that. He wants to go, you know, mess with the dude that's going to grovel and give him his lunch money. You know, and America's like that too. I mean, yeah, technically, rallying all their forces, if they could convince China to stay out, they wouldn't. And that's why it's just a hypothetical. Technically, they could whip North Korea. But they know North Korea will fight. You know, somebody's getting nuked. They're going to lose some ships. There's going to be casualties. They got no taste for that. They're going to go over here and mess with Venezuela or something. And yet, these countries like Iran, it's just like they're clueless. Yeah, they talk all this shit about the great Satan and this and that and the Zionist entity in it, but they don't do shit. You know, during the last thing when it kicked off, you know, turns out they had all of these people working for Mossad in Iran, you know, giving intel, doing all this other stuff. Then come to find out, like the Iranians are basically, they got a heads up from the Americans, you know, don't shoot our planes down and we'll only bomb over here in these areas. What is that? Can you imagine if the Americans contacted Kim Jong-un and said, well, we're going to bomb these certain areas of North Korea, but don't shoot any of our planes down so that this doesn't escalate and get out of hand. No, it ain't going to happen. You have to be amazed, you know. Now you got all these protests, regime change protests going on in Iran, and Trump's threatening, we'll invade Iran. Again, this is right after King Netanyahu just showed up, so I wonder if he has something to do with it. And it's like apparently the Iranian regime just had no clue this is going to happen. Or at least totally inept at stopping it from happening. These protests are being organized by somebody. Who? Do the Iranians even have an intelligence network? Because I can guarantee you, here in the U.S., if you were trying to organize anything against the regime right now, yeah, you're gonna get fed swooped so damn fast, your head will spin. Everybody like four out of the five people you're talking with to organize this work for the federal government, they're all feds. Guaranteed. What the hell? Do the Iranians not have an, do they not have an intelligence network? What the hell are they doing? Who's organizing these protests? What the hell are you doing? You know? I mean, to me, you know, when they launch an attack on you, to me, that says, you know, all, you know, all bets are off. And that's why they don't mess with Kim Jong-un, because that's his attitude, too. His attitude is all bets are off. If you launch a missile into North Korea, everybody knows that means all bets are off. He ain't going to sit around and go, well, strategically, they could launch this and then we could suffer these casualties. We better make sure this doesn't escalate. No, he has this attitude of, well, if it, they've attacked us now, go ahead and take the gloves off. And you don't got to hold back anymore. You just start swinging. These guys, you know, and like I said, it's obvious Iran's next. It's like they got this attitude like, well, we don't want it to get out of hand. Yeah, he punched me in the face three times and I swung back and hit him once. And now we all going to be cool now. But he's just going to come back around for more. Why'd you quit swinging? All these boomer-led countries, you know, they just keep circle-jerking each other around. I don't know, you know. I mean, to me, the day they launch that attack, if I'm running Iran, the day they launch that attack, it's all out. I'm not going to wait for when they're like, oh, wait, stop. Israel's running out of missiles for their Iron Dome. We don't want this to escalate. No, bruh, you escalated it when you launched the first attack on us. I'm launching everything I got. Yeah, I'm swinging. It's on now. You know, we're past the whole talking thing. You know? We're swinging. We're launching everything we got. You're getting the Kim Jong-un treatment. That's why they don't mess with him. You have him as an example. I'm singing the praises of Kim Jong-un here. And that isn't even my intention. I'm just saying, does nobody who's running one of these targeted countries, do they not look at this guy and go, whoa, you know, maybe we should learn something from him. Iran have been bending over backwards, proving our nuclear program is for civilian purposes only. Yeah, that just means to me that you're a dumbass. Because if you had a nuke, they wouldn't mess with you. But see, you trying to go to the UN and prove to everybody what a good global citizen you are, and this your nuclear program is for domestic use only, and to make medicine or whatever other stupid shit. You should be developing a bomb. What the hell is wrong with you? Why do you think they ain't messing with Kim Jong-un? They'd love to mess with Kim Jong-un. They just know they better not. Because not only has he got nukes, he ain't scared to use them. I mean, he'll literally launch that shit off. It don't matter that you could blow him up. He don't care. He's going to get his licks in. Everybody knows it, and they don't jack with him. It's kind of like, you know, they had this whole thing last week. Well, it'd be last week now. It's still this week here. You know, the Ukraine launches all these drones and blows up a bunch of people celebrating New Year's in Russia. They launch a bunch of drones, you know, targeting Putin's house. And the Russians are like, we're going to have a response. And they responded. The Russian military attacked Ukrainian drone-making factories. You know, we always see this. The Ukrainians do stuff like this. They launch these drones. They kill a bunch of civilians. They're launching drones, supposedly. And I don't think it's necessarily the Ukrainians. That has Britain written all over it, honestly. But setting that aside, the Russian response is always the same thing. Oh, our military struck drone making facilities in retaliation for this. And I'm like, what were you waiting on? Why does Ukraine have any drone making facilities to start with? Like, you knew there were drone making facilities and you just let them alone? You know, why? Because it's full of British? I mean, oh, well, because, you know, we don't want to escalate. We're doing negotiations with the boomers. You know, really, Putin, what the hell are you doing? we're going to come to a negotiation, and like any piece of paper signed by the Americans is worth the ink written on it. The Russian military has launched, attacks on Ukrainian drone facilities in response to these drone attacks that killed a bunch of randos on New Year's Eve. If I was a Russian citizen, I'd be like, wait, so you knew there were drone facilities there and you just didn't bother because you didn't want to escalate? What? Oh, because they want to look good. See, this is about looking, on the world stage and showing that, you're so hesitant to be involved in this. You're so, you're just fighting because you have to. You're not an aggressor. Like, Europe is going to stop claiming you're going to invade any day if you show them what nice guys you are. I don't know what the hell is wrong with these people. Anyway, I don't get it, I think the Iranians are going to be next. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They stood by and basically didn't help Hezbollah out. They haven't done jack shit for the Palestinians, for Hamas. They've stood by while Israel has attempted to invade Lebanon, hadn't been successful, but still, it's the principle of the matter. And now it's their turn in the barrel, and they're going to just squat down in there, if you don't know the joke. It's their turn in the barrel. And I don't know. I don't know what the hell's wrong with these people. I know they don't want to fight. I know they're thinking, oh my gosh, it's the U.S. We're going to lose and we could all get blowed up. I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I'm the one that always says that, people need to understand that global politics and this stuff, it ain't a barroom fight. Yes, but, I mean, to me, if somebody launches a missile into your country, it's on. I mean, that ought to just be your response. It's on. Because if that isn't going to be your response, then they're just going to keep messing with you. And now, like I say, Iran has stood by, basically done very little to help out Hezbollah, Lebanon, the Palestinians, any of these people. They've done very little. And now we've rolled around long enough. It's their turn in the barrel, and they're in. Now you're getting the protests, you're getting the regime change stuff getting all set up. I don't know. I don't think it looks good for the Iranians. I don't, from where I'm sitting. I know Iran isn't Venezuela. That's not in America's backyard and whatnot, but I look at the way that they've been reacting to all these provocations. I look at the way they have failed to step up and defend their allies in the region. They keep, we're going to go to the UN again. I don't know. We'll see how it all turns out. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. I'm trying not to run long. I'm trying to keep things to where it doesn't screw up Sven's programming for the rest of the stuff on Radio Albion. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. And again, this story just dropped as I recorded this, but these very general topics that we talked about today, they're relevant. And I don't, it's not like I'm trying to get into the behind the scenes stuff that I don't have any information on, but these general things that we've discussed today, I think they'll be relevant because we have seen this stuff played out. It's what we observe playing out around us. So I think it's safe to get in to have gotten into that today. So anyway, let's get into the good stuff. Let's get into the Christian specific segment. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, there's one commonality in life. One of those things you can be assured of as you go through your life. And that is suffering. Suffering is just a part of life. Now, suffering can take on many forms. Many different levels. There's low-level suffering. There's high-level suffering. But it is somewhat a constant in this life. I thought we'd talk a little bit about whether or not it's meaningful. Does suffering in this life have any meaning? And when it does, and why that is, and when it doesn't. As always, look, I don't claim to be some intellectual genius in this. It's just my opinions. This is just things I have learned, things I believe I have discerned, and I sit down here and share them with you. I'm not in any way, shape, or form claiming to be a theological expert. So if you want to trust the experts, I don't have a degree on my wall. I don't have anything like that to wave around to claim expert status. These are my opinions. More importantly, a lot of times, things that I have learned myself and observed. I'm getting up in years, and I think about people that are younger. And if I can share things that I learned the hard way with some of you that may be younger, and maybe can save you the trouble of learning things the hard way, so be it. You know, why would I not do that? Now, one thing for sure, suffering itself doesn't make you righteous. You know, I mean, you have people who will be like, you know, they think just the suffering itself makes you a good person. It's kind of like how you have, you know, people, and they have this attitude like, you know, just, I guess this stems partially from misunderstanding of things they read in the Bible or whatever. But they have this idea that poverty just in and of itself leads to righteousness, you know. Like the poor are somehow more noble than the rich. Now, I'm not running down the poor. I'm poor myself. I'm comfortable. You know, I consider myself comfortable, but I mean, most people here in the U.S. would just laugh hysterically at the little amount of money that I somehow, God has blessed me with being able to live on and just be content in life. But being poor in and of itself doesn't make you a good person. You know, there's nothing that just automatically means you're a more righteous person because you're poor. And yet I've seen multiple times in my life, I've seen people that do have that attitude, you know, that the poor are noble, that the poor, you know, the poor have a certain sense of just almost nobility because of their poorness. That's bullshit. Likewise, suffering just in and of itself doesn't automatically make you a good person, you know. And you know, when you're going through a time of suffering, you can kind of come up with stuff like that to kind of make you feel better. You know, it's like a salve on your wound, making you feel a little better. You know, I'm just going through this right now. And, you know, that in and of, the suffering in and of itself doesn't make you a better person. What determines that is if you learn something from it, if you gain something from it. If you go through suffering after suffering after suffering and you never learn anything from it, then there's nothing good about it. There's nothing righteous about it. There's nothing godly about it. You're just suffering. You know, there's no positive involved. If you never learn the lesson from it, then it's vanity. It's meaningless. Suffering also is only meaningful if you overcome it. This is a biggie and gets one of the main points that I thought I'd get into, and you know, which made me decide to get into this topic. When does suffering have meaning? You know, and why is that? What defines those times when these periods of suffering have some meaning for you? Well, I would say one of the number one determining factors is whether or not you overcome it. If it swallows you up and you don't overcome it, then you lost that battle. And it won't have any meaning beyond that it basically destroys you. Or cripples you. Or even though you may go on with your life, if you do not overcome the suffering, then now it is, instead of something that you can find growth in potentially, it is something that keeps you shackled down. You know, you have people that are well up in adulthood. I mean, well past adulthood. And they're chained, they're shackled to things that happened to them when they were children. This is an example of you know, the failure to overcome it. It holds them down. If you allow the suffering to tie you down and keep you in place, or even to define you, that becomes who you are. You are defined by an episode of suffering. And what's really, one of the things that's really sad about that is, in those cases where somebody is tied down to things that happened to them in their childhood, after they're well on, moved on in adulthood, you're chained down by something that doesn't exist anymore, except in your head, except in your mind. You know, that whatever happened to you in your childhood, no matter how tragic, no matter how horrible, and I, you know, ghastly things happen to children every day, and it scars them. It scars people for life. But the irony is that now that you're well in adulthood, that doesn't exist anymore except in your mind. Time being linear, time moving continuously. Anything in the past, you know, it only exists in your mind. You can't go and look at it. You can't go pick it up. It's just in your mind, eating away at you. If you fail to overcome it, it wins. Does that make sense? So when you're going through suffering, and again, we're using a broad term here. So, you know, suffering can take on many forms. You know, it can be anxiety about how you're going to pay your bills. It can be any number of things. You know, you don't have to be, you know, like the apostles, drug and thrown into a dungeon, and they're talking about when they're going to execute you level of sufferings for that to count. It can be a smaller level of suffering, but it all amounts to suffering. The first things for overcoming suffering, or I'm sorry, for one of the first things for suffering to have meaning is that you overcome it. You've got to overcome it. And that just means you've got to keep pushing forward. And this is where faith sustains us. This is, you know, because you say, well, how do I overcome the suffering? Well, this is where your faith comes in. You seek the Lord. He says, one of the things about our mission, as it were, as believers, is we see all of this chaos in the world. We see all of this craziness going on, the world on fire, godless people running around chasing their tails and each other's tails and whatever the latest fad is, and the insanity that keeps piling one on top of the other. We remind ourselves we have control over ourselves, and we know what we're supposed to be doing in the Lord. We're supposed to be seeking Him, trying to understand Him, and spiritually growing in this short amount of time that we're here. We get recentered on that. And this gives us something to do. Well, you have this suffering going on, but what do I do? Well, if you look and there's actions you can take to overcome the suffering, do that. If it's just one of those things you've done all you can do and there's nothing else you can think of, but then get back on mission, seeking the Lord, you know, in prayer, reading your Bible, trying to understand, trying to grow. Now, related to this, understanding the suffering. By and large, you're not going to really understand it while you're going through it. You know, so for the suffering to have meaning, first off, you've got to overcome it. If it swallows you up and you don't ever overcome it, it won, if that makes sense. The second of all, when you're going through suffering, it's real easy to get caught up in trying to understand, you know, especially I think as for a lot of Christian believers, you know, there's been time instead of, you know, I was just talking about, you know, being in prayer and trying to get to know and understand the Lord. And when you're going through a period of suffering, it's real easy to fall into this, why God? If all your prayers are, God, why are you making me go through this? Lord, just help me to understand. Why, Lord? Why am I going through this period of suffering? You're probably not going to get an answer. not now. Which brings us to the second and related point. First off, again, you have to overcome the suffering. You have to survive it. And if you do, if you don't let it swallow you up, you have a higher likelihood of understanding it. Suffering is understood like prophecy. Prophecy and suffering are kind of related, I believe. In that, you know, I've said this before, I believe this. Prophecy is always understood in hindsight. You know, if people at the time, you look at the at prophecies in the Bible, and yet people just went on. You know, they got these warnings that if you do not do this, or rather, if you do not stop doing this, this is going to happen. And they still did it. Why? Because prophecy is generally understood in hindsight. You look back afterwards and you go, wow, that guy was right. It was prophetic. He said this was going to happen. The people didn't listen, and that happened. It has meaning. It has understanding. Suffering's like that. It's understood in hindsight. When you're going through it, you try to understand why, and you're probably not going to get that answer. But if you overcome it, down the road, you can look back at that suffering, and you can understand because you'll see what you gained. You know, your life circumstances change. You know, you'll gain understanding and you'll say, oh, wow. You know, even if you're suffering, because let's be honest, a lot of time, I would even venture to say probably most of the time, our suffering is self-inflicted. Our suffering, the things we go through, again, these have to be understood in hindsight. You won't grasp it at the time. But I believe most of the time, honestly, our suffering is self-inflicted. We do it to ourselves. And we sit around and hit our own hand with a hammer, and then we're like, Jesus, why? Why is my hand broke? Well, because you picked up a little 2-pound sledge and hit it with you. You did that. And for some reason, you thought that was a good idea. A lot of times it's self-inflicted. We sin. We give in to temptation. And as is reliably the outcome, we get bad results, which leads to suffering. Understanding that and you know, just so that we don't repeat it. It's understood in hindsight. I can look back. And again, this is why, as you go, this is what I mean. It's understood in hindsight. The older you get, the more various periods of suffering you stack up in your life. This is just a normal thing. No matter who you are, I don't care who you are. This is a part of life. And the older you get, the more various periods of suffering you stack up. And you look back as you gain understanding. You can look back and see. How do I want to put this? Whenever I've gotten into a discussion with people about free will and yet God understanding all things, you know, I don't even get me started dogging on Calvinism because just this lack of understanding of free will and yet God's understanding. This idea that, oh, well, you're just destined, like you don't have free will. But whenever I get into that discussion about free will and yet God's will working to where all things come together for his glory, I've often likened that to basically God sees the big picture. You have free will. You can decide at any minute of yourself what you are or, you know, which direction you're going to go. It's just that because God exists outside of time, he already sees what you're going to decide. He's not making you decide. That is your free will. He just already sees the outcome. It's like if you were sitting watching a movie. It's like, you know, movies you've seen a lot. Like for me, if you ask me, movies you've seen a lot, Dan, the first one that would pop into my mind would be The Outlaw Josie Wales. If you've never seen it, you need to watch it. I've seen The Outlaw Josie Wales so many times. know, if I sat down and watched The Outlaw Josie Wales along with somebody that's never seen the movie before, you see, they don't know what's about to happen. But I do, you know. When he steps up there and says, "You gonna draw them pistols or whistle Dixie?" I know what's fixing to happen and the order that is fixing to happen. That doesn't mean I wrote the script. That doesn't mean I directed the movie or had any part of it. I've just seen it already. Now, the person sitting beside me that's never seen it, they're on the edge of their seat. What's he fixing to do? Maybe that's not the best comparison. I mostly wanted to find a way to wedge the Outlaw Josie Wales in that conversation. You have your free will, but God just, because again, he's outside of time. He already knows what you're going to do. He hasn't taken your free will from you. It's still your choice. You 100% can choose A or B. He just already sees what you're going to do, but it's your choice. You could prove him wrong. You won't, because he's outside of time. He just already sees what you're going to do. And as a part of that, all the pieces fit together. You know, if that is a part of what has to fall in place for something down the road to lead to his will, he factors that in because he can see it. He can see all the pieces. He steps back. He always sees the big picture. Now, where was I going? Where was I going with all that? Your sins, which usually is what leads to your suffering. You know, sometimes you just have suffering that you didn't have any part of. It's just something in the world. You know, if you're minding your own business and one day a tornado blows through your house and you lose everything you own, you're going to be suffering. And you didn't have anything to do with that. You have control over the tornado, but that's fairly rare. As again, somebody with some years on me and some life experience, I can tell you, when I look back at my own life, at various periods of suffering, I can tell you the vast, vast majority of those were self-inflicted. And probably, honestly, related to sin. Not always, but I would say a good part of the time, we're related to sin. We sin, and we suffer for it. We overcome it, ideally. You have to overcome it. It's understood in hindsight. And one of the amazing things here is when you get enough miles behind you, as a believer, you can sit down and look and say, I've grown this far in my faith. I've come this far in my knowledge of an understanding of the Lord. And, you know, I'm where I think I should be, at least at this stage of my life. We're always striving to grow, obviously. We don't ever become really complacent with where we are. We're always, this whole life is defined by struggle and trying to grow in knowledge in the Lord. But you can look at your life and say, you know, you look back, in other words, you can look back and say, you look back at a particular point in your life and say, oh God, why did I do that? You know, you remember how you suffered at some stage of your life. And when you look at it as a believer, it becomes more natural to look at yourself honestly, because that's what we're doing. We're judging ourselves continually. And you look back at a period of suffering in your life, perhaps in your youth or your younger days, and you know it was brought about by your own sin. You did something really sinful, something really stupid. And it's cringe, you know, and you're like, oh, why did I do that? You know, but at the same time, sometimes you can look back and realize that had you not done that, that contributed to you being where you're at today as a believer, having gone through that. It doesn't mean it wasn't sin. It was still sin and you suffered for it. But that played a role in you eventually winding up where you're supposed to be today. It brought you closer to the Lord, even your sins, even your mistakes. Because again, God sees the big picture. He's outside of time. And in your sin and rebellion, even that plays a role in you ultimately getting to where you need to be. 100% guarantee you don't realize any of that when you're going through it. You know, these are things that you're going to say. When you're going through suffering, don't get too focused on wanting God to explain it to you, because you're probably not going to get that answer. now. You'll get that. It's quite possible you'll understand that. You'll get an answer to that later when you're able to look back on it in hindsight, and then you'll understand why you went through it. But right now, while you're going through it, you're probably not going to understand it. It's just how it is. So again, you come back to, how are you going to understand it? Well, you're going to have to overcome it. When you overcome it, that's the first thing. You got to survive it. You got to overcome it. And when you do, later down the road, you will be able to look back on it, and then you'll understand it. Then you'll be able to look back and understand, oh, well, that played a role in me getting to where I needed to be now. This is what gives suffering meaning. Again, suffering itself doesn't have a righteous element to it. Just like being poor doesn't make you more of a righteous person because you're poor. It has meaning if you have understanding. It has meaning if you grasp the big picture later on. Anyway, look, periods of suffering are a normal part of life. You know, your first job, when you're going through suffering, you know, your first thing you've got to do is overcome it. And look, you're not going through something that nobody else has gone through. I'm not saying you're not going through something everyone else has gone through. You may be going through something, you know, unique to yourself in a sense, but at some point in time, someone else went through the same thing. And if someone else has overcome it, you can overcome it too. That's your first thing. When you're going through a period of suffering, first thing you got to do is survive it. Don't get hung up on trying to understand it, trying to figure out God's will for it or any of that. You're not going to get that now. Don't waste your energy. Your first thing you've got to do is get through it. You just got to bear with it. You got to get through it one day at a time, one step at a time. Get back focused on what we're supposed to be doing, seeking the Lord, understanding Him, and spiritual growing. This is how you get through it. Somebody at some point has gone through the same thing you have. You know, again, not everybody has, but somebody has, and somebody has overcome it, and you can too. You got to survive it. If you don't survive it, you know, it's like being in a disaster. You know, if you were, say you were in a plane, and the plane crashes, and you find yourself out in the wilderness, you got a lot of problems, don't you? You're not going to be worried about, I got to pay that electric bill, though, and I'm out here in the wilderness. No, that ain't that. It's like a triage. The first thing you got to do is, okay, the first order of business here is I'm going to have to figure out a way to survive. You know, okay, what do I do? Well, I got about 4 hours till it's dark and it's going to get really cold. Do I have a way to build a shelter? Do I have a way to insulate myself to survive a night of cold? That's the first step. Tomorrow, I'll tackle the decision of whether to hike out of here, wait for rescue, whatever. But I got 3 hours of daylight left, and I know it's going to get down to, you know, 10 degrees tonight, and I'm going to freeze to death. So the first order of business is I got to survive. That's how suffering is. Your first order of business is you got to get through it one day at a time. Time is on your side here. Every day that goes by, you're a day closer to getting through it. You got to survive it. Don't get hung up on trying. You're going to sit there with the plane wreckage all around you and go, why did this thing crash? You got 3 hours of daylight. It's going to get well below freezing tonight. You ain't going to spend that 3 hours sitting around trying to decide, well, you know, did the engine fail? Why did the plane crash? That's for later. You can analyze that later. Your first order of business is surviving suffering is like that. Crisis is like that. Your first order of business is you've got to get through it. The understanding, the whys and the what fors and what role that possibly has played in God's will for your life will be something you can understand when you look back on it. Possibly years in the future, you look back when other things fall into place and you'll see that that played a part. That was a puzzle piece put in place for you to wind up where you needed to be in your growth, in your spiritual growth and coming to know the Lord. But that's down the road. You're in the plane wreckage right now. You got to figure out a way to build a shelter, find enough blankets to wrap up in to survive the night so you don't freeze to death. Analyzing the why of the plane crash, that comes later. suffering crisis is like that. You got to get through it first more. You got to survive it. It's a challenge. You can think of it as an adversary that's trying to overcome. You got to overcome it first. That's first order of business. You got to get through it. And again, time is on your side. When you're going through these things, time is on your side. Every day is a day closer to you. You're a day closer to getting through it than you were yesterday. You may not see the path. You may not see how you're going to get through it. But it'll appear. You every day that goes by that you survive it and you keep working through, you got to survive. You got to overcome it first. Understanding it comes later. And again, this is what gives it meaning in our lives. Just, you know, suffering for the sake of suffering, there's no meaning in that. But if we learn from it, if we grow from it, we overcome it, then we start finding the meaning and where it plays a part in our lives. And look, not every element of suffering necessarily, you know, you can trace back and say, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for that. Some stuff's just stuff you go through. This is just life. Like I say, other people going through it too. This is just how the world works. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of it. I appreciate you joining me this week. Hope the rest of your week, hope the rest of your week goes okay. And I hope I'll see you next week for the Parish of the Patriots.